But I saw the players literally looked like they'd froze. It looked like they froze. It looked like there was too much pressure. But they looked like they'd become over-aroused in terms of the psychology of the game. And maybe that translated to sort of their physical performance as well and technical performance. Massive game. We had like gladiator video on to the lads.
Right.
We were playing. We were doing it.
Your time's that big, this.
We were doing everything we could. We did everything bar messages from the family just before the game.
And did you use any given Sunday, the speech?
Do you know what? We might even use that as well.
Wow.
There's a little bit of me thinks, this is brilliant. I mean, what an absolute pleasure to be coming out and being involved in a game like this. I'm not always thinking that when I'm walking back from the bench into the
getting abused
dressing room. I'm thinking, oh my God, how am I gonna gloss over this defeat in the press? But
welcome, football fans, to Breaking Lines, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the beautiful game like never before. I'm Gary Rowett, former player and manager, joined by the insightful Dave Carolan, a man with his finger on the pulse of football's beating heart. Together, Dave and I bring you unrivaled insight, context, and a few stories from the trenches. Join us as we dissect the game, break down the plays, and explore the intricate dance between managers, players, fans, and the beautiful game itself. This is Breaking Lines, where the game is more than just a match.
One of football's classic cliches is every game is just being treated exactly the same, but not every game is exactly the same. There's the big games, the big cup games, the playoffs, relegation six-pointers. How, as a manager, does your mindset change coming into one of those types of games?
I think as a manager, you try to view every, this is what you think you do. So you try to treat every game in exactly the same value, with exactly the same importance and exactly the same minutia analysis. But the reality is, you know, there are games that do make you want to prepare more or make you want to be even more on top of that sort of weekly preparation and the analysis of that game and you know, the game plan. I think you have to be careful sometimes. I think from my experience, it's very easy in the big games. I remember back to when I was a youth coach. So I remember I was an under 18 coach at Derby, and we had FA, and the FA Youth Cup back then was always the only way in some ways that your youth team could get a little bit of sort of kudos, really, was how far they went in the FA Youth Cup. Yeah. It was something that a lot of academy directors were potentially measured by, trying to win the FA Youth Cup. It would put a lot of eyes on what you're doing. And I remember we played Blackburn in the quarterfinals, and it wasn't all my preparation doing, because the academy director had a say as well in that. And it was a massive game for us, massive game. We had like gladiator video on to the lads.
Right.
We were playing, we were doing it.
Your time's that big, this.
We were doing everything we could. We did everything bar messages from the family just before the game.
And did you use any given Sunday, the speech?
Do you know what? We might even use that as well.
Wow.
No.
Psychological overload.
One of the lads. Yeah. So, and it's interesting because at the time you think, look, this is really important. We've got to prepare properly. But actually, when you saw the game and you saw the players, and it could have worked either way. I've seen it work either way. I don't mean it was necessarily the preparation. It was maybe the choice of preparation for that level and age of player and that importance of a occasion and the match. But I saw the players literally look like they'd froze. They looked like they froze. They looked like there was too much pressure. But they looked like they'd become over-aroused in terms of the psychology of the game. And maybe that translated to sort of their physical performance as well and technical performance. And then I looked at Blackburn, and the only thing I saw was in the warm-up, and they were messing about. They were having circles, they were rolling, they were having little, and they'd purposely, it looked like, gone the other way. It's just another game, let's just go and enjoy it, let's just go and play with a bit of freedom. So I'm not saying either approach at the time, one approach worked and one approach didn't work. It's hard to value whether the teams were evenly matched anyway in that situation, of course. But it definitely showed me that sometimes you can over prepare for a big game, and actually it's the balance of what's right at the time.
So immediately jumps into my head there another cliche, but you know, playing the occasion and playing the game. So from your example there, Blackburn played the game, whereas you almost, or whatever, the team, the club, looked like the occasion. It was a big game and all of the pressure that surrounds it. It's a different kind of psychological state that, isn't it? It's easy for players to get distracted, isn't it? Because naturally, the game is bringing on its own level of pressure. Changing your preparation going into one of those games means whatever they've relied on the past and has brought success has been changed. It feels different. It looks different. It's been treated different.
I think the challenge sometimes is, and no matter what you say about the game, the size of the game automatically is built up more by the club, by, you know, by the fans, by the media. You take a playoff game, for example. You know, a playoff game, they're coming to your ground the week before and they're doing multiple different types of interviews asking you about the size of the game and the playoff game. They're doing the same with players. So automatically that game is always going to feel bigger. It's always going to be built up more. Maybe that suggests that it's even more important to stay the same and the preparation to stay the same. But I think naturally when that starts to ramp up, that media focus, and the game externally becomes built up, regardless of what you do internally, there's always that pressure as a manager to make sure you get it right. You know, if it's a league game, you've got 46 opportunities. You know, if you get something tactically wrong, or you maybe prepare slightly differently, usually it's not going to have too much effect over a 46 game season. You know, over that period, you might do it wrong once or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas you've got a playoff game, you know, let's say, of course, it might be over two legs, but let's say it's a playoff final. You've got one shot. Getting opportunity, one shot, one opportunity, Dave. Can we?
One chance.
Can you cue M&M? This is going to be brilliant.
I can hear it now.
So
that can go on my that can go on my Grime album from season one that I already released.
I don't think Eminem's got quotes of us as in necessarily on Breaking Lines, but who knows?
Who knows? Got secret admirers.
Who knows? Who knows? But I think that, you know, the opportunity within that game is almost to the point where you don't want to get it wrong. So, of course, you want to tick every box. Your game plan needs to be sorted and it needs to be thorough. You know, the training needs to be absolutely on point. So let's say we do, you know, Thursday, Friday, mainly tactical, because we don't want to overload the players mentally and stimulate them too much mentally early on in the week. You know, and there's an element of relaxation early on in the week and just letting them train and get that intensity. There's always that temptation to start that work a little bit early if you've got a free week and you know how important that game is. And I think that's the balance you have to find when you prepare for some of these games, you know. But I think it's a real balance because there's so many things that go into a big game, isn't there? You know, the club building it up with their media because they want to sell tickets. You know, they want to make sure there's a full house. You know, sometimes the owner will say, look, we need to do more. So they'll have all the clappers out or they'll have the flamethrowers as you come out of the tunnel and all the players are sat there going, we don't have these for a league game. What's going on?
Yeah.
It just feels different. And I think it's very, very difficult to completely protect the players from that and also completely avoid it.
I think that's the occasion, isn't it? That's for the people surrounding the pitch to almost hype it all up, isn't it? You know, so whether it's the clappers or the flamethrowers or whatever. Ironically, when you were saying there earlier about, you know, because everything is different surrounding the game, you try and keep everything the same at training. And quite often we end up actually by trying to keep it the same, we do different things almost to decompress it, like having more relaxed training sessions, which actually are different from what we would normally do because we think, oh, the pressure's building, we better relax them. So we do kind of more fun things, you know. Not saying our training isn't always fun, but
we just do fun things.
We just do
for
fun
a change,
things. Yeah. And that kind of plays into that as well, though, doesn't it? You know, so because everybody else is doing one thing, which is potentially ramping up pressure, we've changed to try and decompress it, and we end up both missing the target.
Yeah, look, I think, I mean, I read something in the media recently about Guardiola. So I think Guardiola, before the last game, the last game that they played, they gave the players 2 days off. I think he gave the players 2 days off, which was very unusual for him to do that in a row. But also, you know, again, the skill of a manager, the skill of a head coach is you have to understand what maybe that needs. And sometimes experience, if you've been in that position quite a number of times, you can relate to some of those things. Like, let's say the playoff game. You know, I've been involved in playoffs a lot of times now. You know that key things in that week are, you know, the players need to get their tickets sorted for their families and the organisation sorted early on. Because that can start to seep into the end of the week and start to become a real focus. And the people at the club need to nail that down quickly as well. You need to sort the logistics stuff. I mean, you've had a strong hand in some of that stuff, and you know how that can start to impact your week as it goes on. You know, where are we staying? Is the hotel the right hotel? Is it the right location? If it's a Wembley, is it the right location? Do you stay 45 minutes away that could become an hour and a half if you're stuck in traffic? Easy. Are you better off staying in the Hilton or Wembley? Because actually, maybe it's not quite as quiet as some of the other ones, but you can literally walk over to the ground. And you can see the ground as well from a psychological point of view. You can see the ground and maybe get some of those feelings out of the players, or maybe that works the other way. So I think when you've been involved in it, there's certain things that maybe you can do at certain times. There's no right or wrong, is there? There's no perfect, you know, there's no menu for winning a key game, preparing for a big game. There's no set menu. I think all you can do is
win.
Win. Yeah, yeah.
That's the ultimate arbiter of whether whatever you did was right or wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, I think what you can do is you can tick all the boxes with the players. I think you can make sure there's certainly no excuses for the players so that it's only the performance they need to worry about. And of course, that's a completely different issue and a different problem, because the players might not perform on the day, or the players might not, action the game plan as well as they need to do, because they're human. They make mistakes, or they, you know, they feel certain things in games that maybe they'll do something that they're probably different to what you want them to do. And sometimes that might work and look genius and you'll take the credit. And sometimes it doesn't work and you're frustrated. But ultimately, I think the big games are very, very difficult to get right, because you can try and keep it as normal as possible, but it's so difficult, isn't it? What experiences have you had in big games in your career, working with me or working with another manager, and you've seen little things that maybe have been done badly or well, or, you know, what are your experiences of those big games, or what are your observations, or what have you done either way?
Yeah, I think the first kind of big game I was involved in football was a playoff final. I mean, we weren't expected even to get into the playoffs. So that whole adventure going down to the last game of the season, where we had to win by one goal more than Coventry, I think it was, to get into the playoffs.
This at Norwich, yeah.
And our game finished earlier than Coventry's game. So we had won 2-0, I think it was, and Coventry were winning 1-0 or something like that. I can't remember exactly. It was Coventry and Burnley, I think. I think Paul Gascoigne was playing for one of the teams. So our game had finished, and because of the way media was working at that stage, we were all looking up at a radio commentator from BBC Norfolk who was like listening in to wherever the commentary was from somewhere else. And we're all stood on the pitch and there's whatever, 25,000 people all looking at this one person. And eventually Magnus Hedman makes a great save and we're suddenly in the playoffs. So we weren't expected to be there, and suddenly now you're in it. And of course, we had the kind of game plan, a what-if scenario, because the semi-finals happen pretty quickly, don't they? You play on the Saturday, and then almost by the following week you've got another game, and 10 days later you're either into the final or your season's
finished. It's a gap between the final, isn't it? But the semis come, yeah, you're right, they come pretty quickly.
Absolutely. So those two kind of games took care of themselves. They took care of themselves. It was a really big first game for us. We managed to come out of it with a win, which we weren't expected to do, because the team we were playing, Wolves at the time, had at one stage been 13 points clear at the top. So you're suddenly now into the final, and then it's right, okay, we didn't really game plan for this, because kind of 2 weeks from the end of the season, we were in eighth, and now you're going to potentially go into the Premier League. So suddenly it's right, which of the hotels? Unfortunately for us, it was not unfortunately, but it was in Cardiff, but Wembley wasn't the stadium. It was being rebuilt at that stage. So it was, which of the hotels are you getting in Cardiff? You know, there's kind of two main hotels that serve the, whether it's the rugby teams or the football teams. And then nobody had done that before. Norwich had never been in a playoff. So nobody had ever had to think about the logistics of this. So at that stage, I was quite young and I wasn't really involved in a lot of that stuff, but certainly around the preparation. Well, how do you train for the best part of 12 days that you're waiting for the final when everybody's trying not to get injured? You're trying to keep them fit, but you haven't got any more games to keep everybody fit. Like, every other team has gone on holiday. So how do you keep everyone prepared? So that for me was the biggest challenge, is trying to think about how to manage all those silly little things as such. When do you head down to Cardiff to go and play in the game, or go to Wembley? Like, do you go 3 days before? Because the club will now roll out all of the budget that you previously didn't have to allow you to do things.
You can fly now.
You can fly. It might only be 12 minutes to London.
46 games.
Yeah. A budget is made available, and suddenly, right, you can do this, you can do that, you can get ice chambers in, cryo chambers. You can have it every day if you want for 2 weeks. Suddenly all those things become possible. But again, you're trying to balance that against what's normal for us, because shifted too much and the players get really kind of uncomfortable with all these different things that you're doing. You know, some players like to be at home and they like the familiarity of being at home. So taking them down to a playoff final 3 days early doesn't actually sit well with them. So you're trying to balance all those kind of things. And that was certainly the first one. The other real example I'll give you is the other side. It's like a relegation last day shootout. You know, it's Russian roulette. You lose the game, you're getting relegated.
Does that feel like I've never had that?
Yeah, okay. I've been in that three times.
Not your fault, though.
No, obviously not my fault, but one of them was like an absolute catastrophe game where it was all in our hands and we messed up on the day. And there were lots of things that went into that day that played out where, in hindsight, sometimes that's your biggest learning from big games, is how people react, how they behave when they go into games. So I always take it as a great learning point. But I think those games are also like, it's negative emotion going into the game, as opposed to a playoff or a nice big cup game where it's generally quite positive. Those ones are real negative energies going into it. Of course, everybody's expecting, you know, that you're going to do your best on the game, but they're also going in with a sense of dread, aren't they?
Yeah, I think, like you say, it's not always a big game. Can be so many different things, can't it? It can be a big cup game. It can be a playoff game. It can be a, you know, promotion deciding game at the last day of the season. It can be a relegation. It can be a game in the season when maybe you've lost two or three games on the spin and you sat there going, I know that we need to win this game. Whether you're under pressure as a manager, or whether the team are under pressure, or whether you know your next two or three fixtures are really, really difficult, and it's maybe a game at home against the team in the bottom three, and you think, we need to win this because this is the winnable game amongst it all.
This is the buffer game. Really,
this is the this is the buffer game. So, and I think that, you know, I think what it comes down to is, it comes down to sensing the feel of the group, doesn't it? Sensing what psychology the players maybe need. You know, do they need fun? Do they need relaxing? Is sometimes the best solution to keep them away from the training ground a little bit if you've got a whole week? Sometimes I've done that before, where maybe you've given them a couple of days off, like we were talking earlier, so that they haven't got to think about it, And when they come in, they're fresh and they've only got maybe 3 days build up. Or, you know, is it, or again, is it, you know, some of the challenges are not just the psychological challenges and the training challenges, but, and players are big on this. It's when you think there's a big game sometimes, particularly as a manager, you can sometimes overthink the game and you can overanalyze the opposition. And if you're playing a team that's a very, very strong team, you can end up focusing so much on how do you stop them without occasionally thinking, you know what, maybe, let's say you're at home and your team are quite strong at home. You know, do you focus just on yourself? Do you focus more on yourself just to give the feeling psychologically to the players, but actually we're not worried about them? You know, maybe you are, and everyone knows you are, but the point being, that gives your own team confidence and that gives your own team belief, wow, you know, this is about us. This is what we're going to do. So there's different ways, I think, that you can shape the feeling and shape the approach going into the game. But again, it's such a personal thing, isn't it? You only know that. You know, it's like we spoke about this before, about other people can have an opinion of what that looks like. But when you're on the inside working with players every day, you just get a how many times have we spoke together and said, do you know, it just feels like maybe we need to do something different? Or there's other points of the season where we've said the challenge is actually staying the same and making sure we have complete consistency. You know, and I think either way could be equally as important. The overview for me is if what you're doing is high level, and if what you're doing works for you and your team and your staff, then consistency with just the odd tweak here and there, just to freshen at the right time, but never really having to change too much. You know, people talk about it, don't they? To become elite at anything, you know, it's the hours and the work and the consistent effort. You know, rather than doing things brilliantly one day a week or 2 days a week, it's doing it every single day. It's committing every day. And I think that's the same with preparation. I think, you know, if you're preparing every day for a performance at the end of the week, you know, then a big game in some ways shouldn't feel too different, should it?
It shouldn't feel any different, but naturally they do. You know, there's that drive up to those games where you just can feel your own nervous energy. Even though if you've done 1,000 games in your career, you still get the buzz of a big game, whether, you know, how many Derby games have you gone to and you just feel, I don't mean working for Derby, but, you know, games where you just know it means more in a funny way than your standard game. If you've got 40 standard games in a normal season, you might have another 6 which just mean more, whether that's the first game of the season where you get that buzz, or it's the big games as you talk about, or a Derby one, where it doesn't matter how much your good intentions are to keep everything the same, it's not the same.
And the Derby games, you know, that's a really important point. The Derby games are not necessarily, you know, are they more important to you and the team? Yes, they are sometimes, but let's park that for a second. They're so important to the fans. You know, you're turning up to a Derby game, and those, you know, we've had some brilliant Derby games, haven't we? Like Birmingham Villa, you know, Derby Forest.
Yeah.
You know, literally, you know,
Millwall Palace
in the cup. You know, those type of games. Never had Millwall West Ham, did we? But Millwall Palace in the cup. And some of those games where you look and you go, that has such a heightened importance for your fan base, you know. And actually, that's a different challenge then. That's probably the opposite of what we spoke about for a playoff game, for example, where you're trying to keep it on a level. You're trying to make the players understand, you know, this is just, we're preparing the same way. For a Derby game, you're actually sometimes trying to impart how important that game is to the fan base, and just how important this game is, and we recognise what a Derby means to the people that are paying to watch us and that have followed us for years and years, and their parents have followed us and their grandparents have followed the team. So I think that's a really important type of game, and it's a very different feeling to it, isn't it? And it's a very different game, and actually that might be the game where you want to build up the emotions and you want to build up the psychological impact of that game. Some managers might not want to. Some managers might feel the best way of doing it is to treat it the same. But I think some of those games just feel different, don't they? But part of the challenge we found is, and again, this is a really difficult one, is managing the, you know, we spoke about it briefly earlier, but it's managing the club and managing the club so they don't push the game too hard externally. And I know that's difficult because they have their own remit, and their remit might be to get bums on seats, or their remit might be to create lots of excitement around the game from a commercial aspect. But actually for us sometimes, you know, you're trying to dampen that down a little bit, which is a real conflict at times.
Yeah, well, if you look at your classic derby games where you're going into it, you can feel the electricity almost 3 hours before kickoff. There's just seems to be a buzz in the air when you walk into the stadium, and you think, well, it already feels different, even though there's nobody here. But whether that's psychosomatic or something like that, which is currently the biggest word we've used on this.
A lot of that.
Yeah. But, you know, you walk in, you just feel it. You see the guy who makes the tees for the team, and he's buzzing for the game because, as you say, he's a dyed-in-the-wool fan. They've been waiting for this game potentially for years, maybe decades, for it to come round again. And here it is. It's the day. And you're expecting the players to go out there and just play normally. It's a tough expectation, isn't it? You know, but I suppose, do you have to give the players a slightly different game plan going into that to manage the occasion as well? So, for example, you just know that as soon as that whistle goes, the buzz of the crowd is just going to be off the charts, and players can become over-aroused. And we know that if they're over-aroused psychologically, they're not going to perform. How do you get them to kind of stay calm, or can you even get them to stay calm among all of that?
Well, look, I mean, you know, let's take a game, for example. Let's say it's Derby and we're playing Forest at the City Ground. So it's an away game, it's a Derby game. Apart from the fact that everyone's got the same shoes on as me, of course.
A shout out to Scott.
And a shout out to your mate. And it's an ode to the banter that we used to have there. I have improved a little bit. I'd like to go back there just to show them how my fashion sense has improved. But no, it was good fun, wasn't it? But I think if you take that sort of game, you know, at the City Ground, you know, at the start of the game, you know, they're going to be singing their song. They're going to be through the roof in terms of the atmosphere. It's going to be doubly loud because it's a local game against Derby. And you just know that that is going to have a very different feel to a normal league game. But you also know, to a certain degree, as the opposition manager, they're going to come at you. You know, they're going to come at you early. And because of the atmosphere, it's going to be very hard for their team not to almost overexert themselves early. You know, that can have different effects on the game. But sometimes you can try and use that and utilise that. You know that maybe if you soak some of that pressure up, you might be able to hit them on transitions because, you know, they're going to commit more bodies forward. I'm using that game as an analogy, yeah. But it could be any game. It could be Birmingham Villa. It could be anything. But you're away from home. So certain games, you know, you can use something. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to be successful trying that, but you know how the game's going to pan out, particularly early on. You know, in that game in particular, I remember late on we were winning and their fans were still going, and they ended up scoring in like the last kick of the game almost to equalise. Yeah. So you also know there's going to be other moments of the game that are going to challenge you. So I think you add that into the game plan, you give that information to the players. You know that there's going to be moments in the game, but you know, in a game like that, if you can frustrate the opposition, they're maybe going to get more frustrated and impart that onto the players on the pitch and make them a little bit edgy than maybe a normal game would. So I think there's certain things that you try to shape in the lead up to the game. I think you'd be stupid not to. But I don't think your game plan's going to change too much. I just think you're aware of those little in-game moments that might happen because of the importance of the game, because of the atmosphere in the stadium, and because of the sort of the tense nature between both fans that just creates that feeling in the stadium, doesn't it? But like you said, you turn up at the stadium 2 hours before the game and you can feel the buzz. I mean, that's the other thing, is like, as people working in the game, that's when you realise just how privileged you are to be working in football, don't you? When you turn up to an away game and the atmosphere is electric, or a home game, the atmosphere is electric, and that game's slightly bigger, there's always that feeling I have, and I don't know how you feel, but whenever I get to the bench or walking out to the bench, there's a little bit of me thinks, this is brilliant. I mean, what an absolute pleasure to be coming out and being involved in a game like this. I'm not always thinking that when I'm walking back from the bench into the
getting abused
dressing room. I'm thinking, oh my God, am I gonna gloss over this defeat in the press? But yeah, I think you know how important it is, and I think you know what's on the line, and you know that, you know, as a manager, you go and win a local derby. You know, if we stick on the local derbies for a second, you go and win a local derby. Yeah, okay. Another cliche, the bragging rights are with your club for the week. Going play, people going to work, and you know, there's other fans at work, and I can have a bit of banter with them. But you know how important that win is to them. You know that can make their weekend and make their week, and actually also
make the season
and make their season. And you know also, yeah, because some clubs almost define that as like success for them during that season. But I think also as a manager, you know that's going to probably buy you a little bit of kudos with the fans for a little period as well. Maybe you're in a tough run of games and you go and win that local derby. That's going to create a real feel good and give you an opportunity to maybe build on it. So yeah, there's so many important factors. There's so many reasons why you have to get those big game plans right. But no one's wrote a manual for it yet, unfortunately, have they? And it still comes down to feel and, you know, how you think that game needs to be and how it's going to go. And you know, do you attack more because it's a big game and you might only get opportunity once?
Yeah.
Or is that the right way of doing it? You know, I've been to Wembley before. I've been in big playoff games, and sometimes I felt as I've tried to be too analytical with a game plan. And sometimes I thought, you know, do you just go for it because it's a one-off opportunity? But then we've had other games where you go for it and suddenly you're 2-0 down before you know it because you've ended up too high up the pitch and too much space. So
yeah, classic damned if you do, damned if you don't. But if you get it wrong,
there you go.
Everyone sees it. But if you get it right, you get all the rewards.
Yeah, so I don't mean there's any, like I said, I don't mean there's any right recipe for winning those games. I mean, they just have to come down to that touch and feel.
All right, let's spin it then. Let's go for the underdog. Underdog, cup game, nothing to lose. All of those other games we've talked about, obviously losing the game has got not necessarily catastrophic outcomes, but it's... You know, losing a playoff final is pretty bad. Losing a relegation scrap game is bad. What about when you're like an underdog and you're playing in the cup against a big team and it is the classic free hit? You get to have a go at someone. You can do whatever you want. You almost want that whole build-up, don't you?
Yeah, I think you can use that build-up, and I think you're right. Those are the games that are nice in some ways because you feel like you've got nothing to really lose. Although you have, because if you get an absolute drubbing, that still puts you under pressure. But I think that those games are an opportunity to, you know, at some point of a game, whether that's from the start, whether that's from a certain moment in the game where you feel like you can go for it unlimited, let's take the handbrake off and just literally, you know, throw caution to the wind. You know, you could be playing a Premier League team that, you know, let's say, you know, if you do that from the start, that's a long game. So, you know, it's impossible to do that against a good team for 90 minutes. But if you're at home against a team that are maybe in the next division, but not that far away from you in terms of position, then maybe you can go from the start and really just create that feeling of, right, we're gonna go for it today and be ultra attacking and ultra aggressive and see if we can get the rewards from that. A lot of times in cup games, what you tend to do is you tend to have a normal game plan to a point, and then you know that point in the game where you might have substitutions planned, you might have a plan of, you know, if we're still close in the game, we are going for it for the last 45, or we're going for it for the last 30 minutes, or we have nothing to lose because, you know, a point's no good in a cup game. You know, it's about winning the game and getting through to the next round. So, losing almost, you don't mind risking that because you know, at some point you actually, you know, it's a great position to be in where you can really throw the dice. So I think, again, sometimes a plan doesn't necessarily have to be a whole plan for the whole game. It can be the whole game right from the start. It can be from half time. It can be maybe as you go on in the game with 20 minutes to go where you know that now it doesn't matter. You know, it's an opportunity to go for it. And so in some way you can have maybe two or three game plans. You would normally have that in a game anyway, regardless of if it's a big game or not. You would normally have two or three game plans that perhaps you're ready to use at the right time if the game is going how you... Of course, that's if the game's going how you plan, which very few games end up doing that. But yeah, I think you can. And I think that's an exciting one in some ways because you can, like you say, you can overamp that game for the players. You can or you can go the other way and say, listen, lads, we've got nothing to lose. Absolutely. Like, we're going for it. You know, and so you can have a really positive last half of the week in preparation for a game like that because it can feel very different from a league game. And actually, you know, you can take the shot. People will say, well, why don't you take the shackles off all the time? What I mean is you don't have to be quite as analytical in those games. You can maybe give the players a little bit more freedom to go and express themselves because, you know, it's a win-win to a certain degree.
I think when you look back at some of those games, certainly the ones I've been involved in, when you're playing the underdog, like, they're not nice games, are they? You know, when you know that essentially... Some of these teams, and we've done ourselves when we've been underdogs, is you can change your strategy. You could do something completely different because you probably know that they're expecting you to come and play a certain way. So because it is almost that free hit, you can just do something wildly different. Have you ever had to do that? Like suddenly just go, let's just roll the dice a completely different way.
Well, yeah, I mean... Like you say, going from being an underdog. I mean, I had a spell at the start of my career, probably for the first 3 or 4 years, where I think we had a spell where we had a great cup record. We knocked, I think, more higher league opponents out than virtually any other team over that period. But then the shoe quickly went on the other side.
Oh, no.
The reason I wasn't doing that from a big in my own importance up, I was doing it for context.
Right.
And I remember at Birmingham, were you there then when we played Blythe Spartans?
No, I had
you were lucky. Yeah. You were very lucky because we went.
I've seen the footage.
We went up to Blythe. Oh, that's a. I think that footage. If anyone can get that footage of a goal
on YouTube,
Blythe Spartans goalkeeper getting abused on YouTube. It was so funny in a nice way because it turned.
We hope he's okay. Wrong.
Yeah, it was so funny. I've watched that back since, and I don't know why, but it's just hilarious. But at the time we were losing, so I'm surprised that the Blues fans found that quite so funny. But I think we were 2-0. I mean, we turned up. The pitch was purposely long grass. It was all the classic.
Challenging.
All the challenging situation. I'd made 10 changes, which after about 2 minutes, I thought, what have I done?
Yeah.
And we were 2-0 down. And we were 2-0 down to a Conference North side and we're a Championship side. So you can put that in context of cup upsets. That's going to be pretty big up there until Maidstone.
Your headlining match of the day.
Until Maidstone recently have helped me out a little bit. But eventually, thankfully, we got it back and won 3-2. And that was a half time, right? We are going to have to make some changes. And I'm just going to have to do something different to hope that, you know, we can get a different outcome. Because at that moment, you're thinking, this is going to be like, it's not just the game. You're actually, time slows in those games. And you're actually sat there thinking, and there's no disrespect to Blythe Spartans, you know, but you're thinking, as Birmingham manager, it's going to be embarrassing. They're having a carnival. Their fans are literally all dressed up, having an absolute carnival. I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to sell this afterwards? Or what am I going to say?
Do people have tinfoil cups cut out of cardboard? Like
they had that. They had like Viking hats on. They were dressed in all sorts of things. And I'm thinking, this is going to be horrific. And it was only when that third goal went in, I can't remember when it was. I think it was around like the 80th minute and just a sense of relief. thinking I'm not gonna have to deal with this.
Yeah.
But also looking back, that's the beauty of the cup. That's what a cup game can do. That's why, you know, maybe for Blythe Spartans, it'd have been interesting to see how they approached the game. Did they think they had nothing to lose and that's why they played so well? Did they over egg the game, the importance of it? And you know, so again, you don't know what an opposition have done to create probably a very good performance that was an outlier in their season to a certain degree.
Of course, yeah. That used to be one of the great levelers, wasn't it? Yeah, the surface potentially was challenging. Well, that rather than calling it terrible, you know, no, the terrible. Dressing rooms were rubbish. And you go to some of these places and I was like, oh my God, everything is stacked against the higher ranked team because they're just not used to it. Throughout all the leagues now, the surfaces are great. You know, the dressing rooms are quite nice, you know, just the standard across everything. And maybe that's why we don't see as many giant killings as we used to see, because essentially if everyone's got a real nice deso pitch, you know, that opportunity in a big game to suddenly strategize differently, like let the grass grow longer in the corners or whatever, it's just not available, is it?
No, because you used to get all sorts of things, didn't you? You used to have, you turn up somewhere, really tight pitch, long grass. You know, I'd been at clubs where they've trained on the pitch on the Friday on purpose to and told the groundsman to leave it. You know, I won't name those. By the way, the groundsman was devastated at the time. He was like, oh, can't I just mow it a little bit?
Because it looked great on telly.
Because he was thinking this looks like terrible on TV and a reflection of him. But everyone looked for that advantage, didn't they? And back then, like you say, you know, nowadays, every pitch is great. Every pitch is probably a similar size, I would imagine. Every team has...
signage.
Every team's trying to play a certain way. Every team's full of people who've come through now the academy system, which has been so prevalent for the last sort of 10, 15 years. And now, you know, you go to a non-league side and they're playing out from the back with young footballers who are all good on the ball. So there's very few... You can outplay a team, but it's very rare that a team in non-league are going to outplay a team in the Premier League nowadays.
I think you're overlooking the fact here that maybe postmen and electricians and builders have been practicing harder. You know, maybe they're technically better than they used to be, you know, across all aspects of the game.
Quite possibly, yeah. I played with a player, actually, but used to was a builder and used to do a day's work, a day's labour, and then turn up either for training or turn up for an evening game. And you think to yourself, wow, I mean, we're digressing slightly now, but you think to yourself, wow, that is incredible. You know, that probably puts a cup upset into even more context. So that player isn't actually preparing the way. So that's probably why nowadays it's slightly different, isn't it? Because the playing field is definitely skews upon a lot more level in terms of what a Premier League or a Championship side will now go to in one of those cup games. And it probably levels it up. Probably means that the game plan's not quite as important as maybe it once was.
Well, it's certainly always good to see when there's those big cup upsets. We've been on both sides of the fence on those ones, but we just love when big games come around. There's nothing like them. They're the ones that stick in your memory forever, aren't they, that you tell grandchildren of when we have them. We'll tell them about those big games.
Well, I think, look, I once again, they're the moments when you realise just how privileged you are to be involved in the sport and to work, well, not even work in it, have a hobby that you get paid to do. And those big games, I think they sort of bring out every little emotion and they bring out those feelings of sort of gratitude, I think, for how lucky we are.
Yeah.